This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 27, with founder and lead trainer at FocusWorks Training and Development, Teresa French.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast. This is the show where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true groove in life by doing work that matters not only to them, but possibly the rest of the world. Every Thursday, we publish another conversation about the art and science of truly living a life of passion and how you, too, can do the work you're meant to do. Today's host is myself, JC Preston. I'm founder of New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping people do passion-filled work and, more importantly, giving them the resources and community they need to help share it with others. Hope you all are having a great week, getting the things done that you need to accomplish in order to move forward in your business and lives. If you've had any setbacks this week, just know that that's part of the game, honestly. Adjust and keep persevering, and you'll eventually obtain your goals. With that said, I think this week my guest is someone that should surely give you some motivation to keep doing your thing. Teresa French has had a number of businesses over the years, originally starting with a photography studio and then moving on to what she does today as a speaker and trainer. But she's truly had a bumpy ride in that process. But she keeps picking herself up and adapting. She might call it reinvention, but I personally think there's a big piece of fortitude in there as well. Some of the things that we talk about today include where that perseverance of hers comes from, how she got into photography in the first place, how she eventually transitioned into speaking and training, and one important thing you need to know before you transition from one job or career to another. Today's episode is powered by Fizzle. For those of you who have been following this podcast for a while, you know that I highly recommend getting a Fizzle membership. If this is the first time you've heard this show, Fizzle is one of my favorite communities on the web. If you want to make a dent in the universe doing something you care about, then Fizzle.co is your one-stop resource for video training. But that's not all they got. In fact, they also have this great forum that you can connect with other creators similar to yourself, the beginner, or even the re-beginner. I know one thing you might be asking yourself is, why should I join a community that I need to pay for when I can just go to, say, Facebook and, you know, join one of those for free? Well, here's the truth. When I was first rebooting New Inceptions last year, I thought exactly the same thing. In fact, I had to get people's opinion about Fizzle before I even signed up. But I'm glad I did, in retrospect, because it was where I met my first real contacts that were in the online business space near the level that I was at. Some of those folks are still part of my mastermind today, in fact. You know, I believe when you're forming the initial tribe that it's highly important for you to surround yourself with people who are near your level. That way, you're not dead weight on someone way above you. And in fact, I think I was a part of a class with Pat Flynn that was talking about that. So what I've found is that a ton of folks who are in these free groups are way ahead of the normal beginner. In fact, many times they simply make you feel like your questions are not worthy of being answered, or worse yet, you know, many folks come off as being extremely spammy. You know, that's part of the reason why they have all those rules in those groups. It's like, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do that. And the reason why, again, is because, you know, those are free groups and it's like they're just trying to keep all the spammers from getting in there and doing bad things. So, you know, if you want to be a part of a community that, you know, you can share whatever you want to share and, you know, just get honest feedback, then that's going to be fizzle or something like it. But the truth of fizzle, everyone is honest and very helpful. So if you're looking for a virtual space where most users are just now getting off the ground or slightly ahead of you, then I highly recommend checking out Fizzle. You can do just that for 2 weeks for free by visiting newinceptions.com/fizzle. And again, that's newinceptions.com/fizzle. And make sure to say hi to me when you get in. I'll be glad to show you around and introduce you to some folks. So again, I'm happy for you guys to hear from Teresa in this great talk today. I really think that if you ever felt like you're lost when building that new business or are simply tired with what you're doing now, then you can learn a thing or two from what she's gone through. Reinvention is definitely a process that we all have to go through from time to time. If you have any questions for myself or Teresa, send us an email at heyguys@newinceptions.com. I'll be personally happy to send on any questions you have for her. And as always, you can follow along at home via the show notes at newinceptions.com/session27. So without further delay, let's jump into this one with Teresa French. What's up, everybody? I'm JC, and welcome back to the Today Show. Today's guest is a master of forward thinking and has a success-focused mindset. She actually has a diverse background, including being in multiple industries in her career. And I think you could definitely call her a serial entrepreneur, as she has had experience in speaking, training, business development, and as a marketing consultant and sales trainer. She brings with her more than 20 years of road-tested business-approved experience as well. And whether it's leadership training, communication, sales, or personal development, her message is simple: grow your business by growing your people. She is a new and much needed breath of fresh air to the world of speaking and training, and her name is Teresa French. So Teresa, thanks for coming on the show today, and I'm glad for you to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here and looking forward to the time to spend with you and your listeners.
Great. So kind of starting things off here a little bit. Generally what we do in the first part of this the talk is to kind of just go back into your background, see how you've gotten to where you're currently at, and really just kind of see if we can't make any bridges for listeners and seeing if there's, you know, if they have a similar background to where you might have been at one time, how they can kind of see, oh, that's where she juked and I was driving, so maybe I should juke as well the way that she went. How did you get into entrepreneurship? How did you, you know, decide that, you know, maybe you should start making, going out there, doing things that are important to you or things that you like doing, and, you know, actually bringing in a buck due to that? Was that something started in childhood, high school, what?
Well, I think it really is in my blood. I had no choice. You know, just like bad habits and you know, all those things, the DNA makes you as a human. The entrepreneurial blood is in my veins. My dad was a serial entrepreneur, both a traditional business, brick and mortar in his small town, as well as many direct sales businesses. Mm-hmm. So all of us kids were brought up on, you know, make your own way in the world, find your own thing and do it. My dad's famous quote is find a niche and fill it. So, growing up with that, along with all the motivational books and many of the different things that he shared with all of us kids, I had no choice. And when I reached, you know, I reached college, I graduated college and started working for other companies and realized really quickly that I kind of like to be in charge. So I didn't really like other people telling me what to do. It didn't resonate with me. Right. So it was very quickly that I realized that I definitely wanted to be my own business owner. At first, though, I really didn't know what I wanted to be. So I had a lot of experience with my first job. And I think that really got my starts for the first job. I've had many. So I think, yeah, to answer your question, just really being brought up in that environment and being influenced by my father.
So you didn't necessarily buck the system, because I know some folks that maybe where we'll like, okay, this is what my parents did, but, you know, we didn't have much growing up and we kind of had to, and, you know, the job looks like something that would, would lead to stability, right? I mean, that's, you know, that's what a job gets you. And so a lot of people, you know, they have parents that are maybe, you know, they have done business, but they put so many hours in it, or that time that their parents put in, it's like, man, I can't see myself working because I want to be around the kids. Right.
Well, I think in my case, and I think in a lot of people's cases, in fact, who don't own businesses, who are young or have never owned a business and are looking from the outside in, mm-hmm. I saw all the good things. I didn't see all the hard work. I didn't see the long hours. I didn't see the stress from the instability. My parents were very good at providing for us kids, and it just looked fun. He could make his own hours. He could come and go as he pleased. He could make his own prices. If he wanted to make more money, he just raised his prices. I mean, I saw all of the good things about owning a business.
Right.
And it wasn't until I owned my own that I got a really rude awakening to all that is really behind the scenes of owning your own endeavor. So I think for me, it was a little disillusioning, to be quite honest with you. But we'll probably talk about that in a few minutes.
Right.
For me, it was really just seeing all the freedom. I mean, when you own your own business, you've got all the freedom in the world, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, again, I mean, it's just, you know, it was to me, again, it was just like whatever your parents tend to do, you know, the sure. kids usually tend to book the system for whatever reason. And I was just kind of curious as to why that wasn't your situation. But hey, if they were able to express the positive perception on that, or that's what you got out of it, that's great.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, don't be fooled. My dad, I mean, all of us kids wanted to go to college, and when you own your own business, you don't have to go to college, but right. we all still wanted to go. Mm-hmm. And my dad used to say, well, you're going to go and spend all this money, and you're going to come out with a piece of paper you can't wipe your,
right,
you know what, with.
Right.
And, you know, all of us kids still went, because we knew that, you know, what comes after first grade is second grade, after ninth grade is 10th grade, and after 12th grade is college. That's just I think that's how we all think in our society. Mm-hmm. And so we knew we wanted to follow that path, but even in college, I knew that I would be using all that I was learning for my own endeavor someday. And right. I think early on in high school, I wanted to be many things: a psychologist, a choreographer, or a marketing agency rep. So I was going to have a briefcase and the stilettos and the Lexus. That was my dream. And once I got halfway through college and realized that my colleagues who were going off to go and work for agencies were working 75 hours a week, I said, no, thank you. Mm-hmm. So that's really where everything started to turn. And I started realizing that maybe there's another way. Maybe there's another path.
Right. Well, and I can completely relate with that one too. My undergrad was electrical engineering, and I had some friends that got out of school semester or so before I was. And I saw, like you did, I saw a lot of the same, you know, people that were putting in these crazy amounts of hours, and some of them were doing, you know, swing shifts, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, working third shift. And I'm like, I thought part of the reason to go to school was to avoid stuff like that, you know, and the thing was, I was just like, I'm going to go to grad school now, because I always knew I was going to get at least a master's. And yeah, it only took me a semester off to realize I was going to be going back to school. So yeah. And I was just like, okay, so what am I going to study when I get there? And you know, entrepreneurship was kind of starting to re-enter my vocabulary and my thinking at that point, because I'd done entrepreneurial stuff back in high school. But, you know, for me, it was like, I can't do that, because I had that taste already. And for me to be able to do what they were doing as engineers, I was like, nope. So went back to grad school and got into an entrepreneurial program, and that was kind of how I did it. Now,
right.
what was your major? What did you see?
Marketing and human psychology. Okay. So I figured both of those would work well for promoting a business. And right. I can, as sure as I'm sitting here, it did.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Because I can definitely see psychology working and marketing.
Oh, sure. Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Cool. So from there, then you graduated college then, and what happened then? So you just decided to do your own thing, And
kind of roundabout way. Yeah, there one little stop before I got there, because to be quite honest with you, what I ended up having as my very first business, mm-hmm. I kind of fell into that. It was not my intention. So in college, I took some photography courses. Mm-hmm. I learned how to process and print photos. I learned the difference between an aperture and a shutter speed on a DSLR camera. Mm-hmm. And I went into the world thinking, okay, that's just one of those electives you take, no big deal. Ended up working at a photography studio. Mm-hmm. Locally there where I graduated, the semester before I graduated, and within a month became a photographer, lead photographer, and office manager. Worked for him for about 4 years. And I remember sitting at a photography convention talking to a colleague, and I said, in 5 years, I'm going to own my own studio. And to almost the month, I moved to Minnesota to buy an existing studio. So my very first business was photography because of the years I had spent in the photography business, having managed and then worked at a color lab as well in that time frame. Uh-huh. So my first stop as a business, I got all this experience working for someone else and then took all that knowledge and turned it into my own business. Right. And the interesting thing, I think what I touched on a moment ago, again, even working in the business, I still only saw the positives. Maybe it was selective sight. I'm not sure. Maybe I only wanted to see the good stuff. But even working for him as long as I did, I still only saw the really cool parts about owning a business. Uh-huh. And I got into business very naively, moved to Minnesota, tried to buy an existing business, which that business deal actually fell through. Because I'm resilient and I'm a little bit stubborn, I decided to stay and stick it out. And it was a great run. I owned a photography studio for about 4 years. I'm going on five. And I was successful by all measures that the industry would consider you successful. Mm-hmm. So I was full service, took photographs of seniors, weddings, business portraits, local school sports, you know, basically anybody who needed portraits, that's what I did. Never really chose to niche into one or another. And in hindsight, knowing what I know now, it might have been to my advantage to have done that. But at the time, you know, you open this business with a negative bank account because of the business deal having gone bad. And you say, wherever the money is where I'm going to go.
Right.
That's what I've got to do.
Necessity. Right. Mm-hmm, right.
Absolutely. So that was my first endeavor.
What particularly did you what kind of the many kinds of photography subjects that you had? What was your favorite, and what kind of, if you know, you said that thinking back now you would have niched, what niches would you have chosen?
I absolutely loved, it's kind of a toss up between weddings and seniors. Mm-hmm. Well, now that I say that, I loved babies too, for a couple of different reasons. So, you know, if you think about the life cycle of someone's life, you have baby to senior to wedding. And if you can get them at the baby season, mm-hmm. and build that relationship, you'll get them most likely, if you're in business long enough, to get them at the senior phase. And then when they go off to get married, you get them as the married phase. I mean, that's the idea.
Yeah. Okay.
So you want them as early as possible, but sometimes, not everyone does the 3, 6, 9 month photographs. So it's a little harder of a sell. Mm-hmm. And weddings are a little higher ticket items. So those are a little more difficult to sell. You need to put a little more effort into both of those. But seniors ended up being a really strong lane for me because, number one, I'm full of energy. And hopefully you can tell that in my conversation. But seniors loved me.
And just to clarify, we're talking about seniors in high school, not
we
old
are.
People.
Yes, high school seniors. Good call. That's one of those industry nomenclatures that photographers all know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But yes, we are talking about high school graduating seniors, graduates.
Gotcha.
I had a system down pat. I mean, I was photographing anywhere between 160 to 200 seniors a season. Mm-hmm. And that is huge volume for the studio that I was, the size of the studio that I was. But I could run them through. I just put them in, I put them into a process. I put them into a system. On Mondays was a clothing consultation. On Tuesday through Friday, I would photograph every 2 to 3 hours. I'd have a new senior in and we would just run them through. And I don't mean to say like cattle, because every one of them was important to me, but the process from an outside view kind of look like running cattle through a gate, you know, just one right after another. I love that because, number one, I was making an impression on very young lives. many of these seniors didn't want to be in my studio taking pictures. This was just something mom made them do. And so if I could let them bring in their own music and we could have cool treats and just really create an environment for them to have fun, that's exactly what I did. And it was just, I had, you know, lots of different events that I put on for them, promotional things. We had a mid-year celebration, ambassador celebration. It just was a lot of fun, I think, because of the youth concept, you know, staying young, staying high energy. And of course, I did actually do several weddings for several of my seniors later. But again, that's a weekend work, higher ticket, weekend work. So it really causes you to work about 7 days a week. And of course, then the babies. So you can either get them on the front end or the back end. You get them as seniors, move them into weddings, and then they have babies and you get them then. Or you start the other way around. So I think between those three, that's really
you definitely have a life. Well, not a lifetime, but a continuing, you know, process. And I could even see with the baby shots. I mean, you're looking at what baptisms and, you know, a whole bunch of different things like that. So
I did a 3-6-9 month program in 1 year and created an album for them out of each of those sessions. Had a birthday with a birthday cake, you know, almost naked baby with a birthday cake on white background. That was by far my biggest seller. And who doesn't love pictures of their kids?
So, right.
But it was, you know, it was a very demanding business because we're talking about an emotional business. We're talking about people who, number one, most people don't like themselves in pictures, yet they know that it's a necessity. So we had a lot of conversations across the table about why these are important and, you know, try not to be so self-critical. And from the outside, it looks like, oh, it's just photography. But we forged some very deep relationships with a lot of my clients because it really was about building them up and letting them see themselves the way everyone else sees them. Mm-hmm. And there's a component to that that really it comes right down to who do you want to be in the world and how do you want to affect other people? And one of the things I learned through this entire experience with the studio was I am not what I do. I am who I am and how I be in the world. And you've probably heard it before. We are not human doings. We're human beings. And what I've learned, and, you know, we're kind of jumping forward here, but at the end of the day, we are who we are and we affect other people positively, hopefully, or negatively, unfortunately. But we do so because we choose to be a certain way. And I identified at that time in my life with what I was doing. That made me important. And what really came out of all of that is that what was really important is how I was being with my clients and how I was bringing out their best and encouraging them and affirming them.
Right. So, well, and that's funny that you should even mention that because even just this morning I was kind of cruising around on Facebook, but it kind of came to my mind that one of the reasons I haven't gone with like anything like Periscope or anything like that. Is that I just, especially, and I feel like guys are this way in general as well, is that we kind of just don't like putting ourselves in front of a camera. And, you know, it's like we just don't want to be the center of attention, even though there are situations like, you know, my background again is in academia. And as an educator, you have to be in front of people. Right. But at the same time, it's like, what am I doing in front of a camera? Why is people taking pictures of me? Because you don't want to be that focus. You don't want to have to be the focus. You just want to help people. You know, there's a difference of thinking there. Mm-hmm. And so I guess what are some of the things that, you know, maybe you have thought of over the years, or maybe that you've told to other people on the side of the table to kind of, you know, have them engage with the camera?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question because, so one of the things we have to keep in mind, there's two things that I want to bring to your attention and to your listeners' attention, whoever might be listening. If you think about it, one of the biggest challenges we have when we see ourselves on camera or in still photographs is the fact that we don't recognize ourselves. If you think about how much time you spend with yourself in front of the mirror, you brush your teeth, you put on some makeup, you do some hair, less than maybe 20 or 30 minutes a day. Would you agree with that?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you see yourself suddenly, you know, other than a quick glance in a store window as you're walking by, or the car window, and even that's just glimpses, we don't study ourselves. We don't see ourselves. But all of a sudden, we see the alternate view in a video or a picture, and that now we're examining all of those things that we don't even realize that we have. Our features, our dimensions of our face, how our hair lies on our face, all of these things become very apparent. And we're not familiar with it. And when we're not familiar with things, we oftentimes put them aside as being odd, being bad, being not perfect. And our internal image is never matching what we see on the outside. So if you think about, too, you've done some traveling and you've gone to beautiful landscapes, I bet. Have you ever taken a picture of a gorgeous sunset or a beautiful mountainscape with a lake?
Right. Yeah. Of course.
And have you gotten the picture back and you went, oh, man, that just doesn't look nearly as pretty as it was in person.
That's why you take multiple shots, right?
But there's some times where no matter how many shots you take or how great a camera, experiencing it in real life is never as beautiful, or I should say is more beautiful than anything that you ever capture on film. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would definitely say that, you know, what is it, a picture? What is it saying? The picture doesn't hold candle or something to
right.
it doesn't
hold a light.
Yeah, exactly.
So think about that in terms of when we see ourselves versus when people see us in real life. We're not always able to capture on film the same essence that you see in real life. That same energy that we convey to other people is rarely captured in pictures. We do our very best. And that's why professionals are trained to be able to put you in poses and be able to use the correct lighting and use all of this to be able to make a portrait of you that is as close to real life as possible. But oftentimes it falls short, and we have to leave room for that. And oftentimes people simply say, I don't like myself in pictures. Number one, they don't see themselves that way. They're not familiar with it. But number two, it really isn't a true representation of who they are and how they're seen in the world by other people. So right. We just need to be less critical of that. Leave room for realizing that photographs rarely capture the actual beauty, and know that there's beauty there. And I too think it's a legacy for other people. Anyone who says, I don't like myself in pictures, remember that you have family members that love you, that when you're gone, it will be all they have of you. So right. Be willing to take photos. That's my lesson for the day.
Well, I'm glad that you bring that up, because I think that's one of the reasons why I'm actually motivated to be a creator now, especially is that, you know, when mom passed back in 2010, I didn't necessarily have that many things. Yeah, I have pictures, but I didn't have any, like, I have one video, right, of somewhere of her talking about her parents' place or something like that, right?
Right.
And, you know, it's like, I would like to know where that is, because, you know, it's just, especially what you're saying is that when you don't have them around anymore, you want to have as many examples or as many, you know, or samples of them, so that you can be like, yeah, okay, they're still, you know, they're not here, but I can still hear them, or I can still see
them.
That's right. Right.
And no one who is looking at your still photos or your videos are looking at them with the same level of perfection as you are.
That's so interesting.
Always do it. Be out there. You know, depends on your industry, depends on what business you're in, depends on how you want to convey yourself. But at a minimum, I would recommend to everyone to go do a family picture every year.
Really? Wow.
Absolutely. I mean, to watch the migration, I had many families that over 5 or 6 years would come back and have family pictures every year. And it's just such a beautiful thing to watch them progress and watch their kids mature, and to just watch that the generations growing up together. It's just a really amazing phenomenon to watch. And of course I get it. I get to do that because I see a lot of different people. But for each individual family, sometimes it's taken for granted. So don't let the time slip by. Go contact your local photographer today.
Huh. Well, it really seems to me that you have a lot of experience at, you know, being a photographer and, you know, just in general, like, so much good stuff, and yet I know you more as a speaker, and or at least you're aiming to go that route, because you know I know that you've been through the, like me, through the John Maxwell training, we met through the Brendon Burchard group, and you know the thing is that that's not photography,
right?
What's the disconnect? How did you leave, or not? How did you de-highlight that part of yourself, and now you're onto other things? How did that transition occur?
Well, it crashed and burned. That's the short and the long of it. You know, I spoke at the beginning a little bit about the fact that I only saw the positive sides of running a business. Mm-hmm. For so long in multiple experiences. And when you become a business owner, oftentimes you're not ready for the sacrifice that comes to be that business owner. And part of that problem, you need to know a lot of things when you run a business. You need to wear a lot of hats. I'm sure we've all heard that, but I don't know that entrepreneurs who are just getting started really understand what that means. We are all tacticians by nature. And if you've ever read the E-Myth, Michael Gerber's E-Myth, I would recommend that to anyone getting started in a business, to begin thinking like an entrepreneur and not like a business owner. What I became was an owner of a job, because obviously I was trying to serve so many people, robbing Peter to pay Paul for a good solid 5 years, coming out of, you know, we had a business deal that went bad, we started negative. And then Teresa, I knew how to do three things really, really well. I knew how to take great pictures that people fell in love with. I knew how to market myself because I had the experience and I had my degree and I was just very creative with my marketing plan. And I knew how to sell. When someone was in my studio across the table, I knew how to appeal to their psychological side and sell the pictures that I had taken for them. The fourth thing that I should have had more experience in and didn't was managing the money. And for a very long time, for a good 5 or 6 years after my studio closed, or I should say I closed the studio, I used to tell people, oh my gosh, I grew so big, I just couldn't handle it. I just had to close it down. Mm-hmm. Well, anybody who's has any experience in business whatsoever knew that I was full of
malarkey. Yeah, we'll say it that way. Right.
It doesn't happen. I mean, if you are doing that well, you're hiring staff, first of all. Uh-huh. And I could never quite get to the point where I could afford to hire staff because of the management piece of it. Mm-hmm. So what really came full circle, and everything caught up to me on one particular day in March when I had been now this is back when we had film and negatives. Okay. So you send your film into a lab and the lab processes it and sends you back prints. And we don't see a lot of that anymore. So much of it is digital that for my younger audience out there, you're probably thinking, what's a negative? But at any rate, on this particular day, the UPS man shows up. I had been on COD cash only with my lab because I was behind on my lab bill. And I needed this box, which had an order in it, that needed to pay for the next order and the next order after that. So as soon as I got this order, I could collect the money from my customer, apply it to the next order and the next order after that, except I couldn't pay for this order. Mm. And on that particular day, when he walked into my studio, I said, I don't have the money. And he says, well, I have to take it out. And he turned around, he walked out. And I do believe to this day that he literally walked out, not only with my pictures, but with any semblance of success and my integrity with it. Because at that point, I turned around and I said, I can't do this anymore. This is not, and I had never quit anything in my life. So the prospect of quitting was so foreign to me that I had to call my dad. And I said, Dad, I don't know how to quit. Here's what's going on. What do I do? And he said, well, you hang a sign, you close the door, and you stop doing business. And that was like, I can't even tell you the surreal feeling of considering quitting. Because at that point, quitting to me was failure. Mm-hmm. I had failed.
Right.
But in fact, what lesson in the long term came out of that was there are times in our endeavors, especially as entrepreneurs and business owners, that when we're so deep in, there's a thing called strategic quitting. Mm-hmm. It's time to get out. And Seth Godin talks about this, and he talks about it as a cul-de-sac. You know, are you going up a mountain? Will you get to the peak at some point and then ride on the other side down the hill? or are you just in a cul-de-sac and going to keep going around and around? And financially, I would have been in a cul-de-sac just going round and round and round. And if that didn't make things, I mean, all things happen for a reason. And it's amazing for me to look back at this experience now. But the very next night, after I had called my dad, I was sitting down working again. I was working about 7 days a week, at least 17 hours a day. And that's not even an exaggeration. My husband came down. It was a little close to midnight. And he walks up behind me and it was just strangely silent. And I'm working away at the table, getting my next order done and trying to just push through. Quitting wasn't an option. I heard what my dad said, but I couldn't imagine it. It didn't make any sense. And I just sat there and working, and my husband stood in the doorway, just silent. And I finally said, what do you want? What's going on? And with a voice that I had never heard before, he said, I want my wife back. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Nice.
And I said, what? What do you mean? He says, I didn't marry a studio. I married a wife, and I don't get you anymore. Mm-hmm. It's either me or the studio. And he walked away and went back upstairs. And at this point, I now not only have to choose my next order, my next job, now I have my marriage on the line. Mm. And it was at this moment that I decided that there's nothing more important than our relationships. And it was a really big indication to me that I was going down the wrong road. And I had to do the one thing that I never said that I would do, and I had to quit. And in that, the healing process that takes place over the next 12 to 18 months was a lesson in learning. Like I said earlier, I thought I failed and I was no longer valuable in the world because I failed at my business. I mean, I lived in a small town. Everybody knew me. Everybody loved me, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But the minute I ran into trouble in my business, it was amazing to me how many friends I no longer had. It was amazing to me the rumors that got started and the shame that was attached to it. And at the time, all I could do is hide in my house and literally just hide with my head in the sand and hope that I could maybe wake up the next day. But at that point, I realized that I'm not what I do. I am who I am, and I have value, and I have gifts, and I have talents that I bring to this world. And I can do those in any shape or form that I want. It doesn't have to come in the form of a photography business. It doesn't even have to come in the form of me doing a business at all. I could be who I want to be in the world in any job that I choose to have, if I choose on how I want to be. And what I want to be and what I knew my gifting is encouragement, it's affirmation, it's teaching and helping, and it's coming alongside people and making the very complex very simple so they can be successful. And if I can be that, I can do that in any job, any other business, or anywhere else that I would go. So while failure hurts at the time, it actually sucks a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was life-changing for me in the best possible way, because I learned probably the greatest lesson that I would want any entrepreneur out there to know. Decide on who you want to be in the world and go be that. And don't be afraid of changing lanes. Don't get tied to the path to the goal. Get tied to the goal, because there's lots of different ways to get there. And a mountain is not climbed by one path. There are many, many paths around the entire thing. The goal is to get to the summit. Be creative in how you get to the summit.
Yeah. Just make sure you choose the right vehicle to get up there too.
If that's a pack, if that's a pack animal or a donkey or your own 2 feet,
right? Exactly.
Some
exactly.
are going to be harder and some are going to be easier, and you have to choose what you're willing to commit to and the fortitude that you have to get there.
Yeah. So you realized who you were, but you didn't necessarily. What was your next step from here? I mean, did you go back to? Obviously, you probably wanted to fix that financial situation that you had going on. And I doubt the best way to doing that is to start something up right away. So what was your next step?
Well, believe it or not, I have a loving husband who has faith in me. And I actually did start another endeavor, or attempted to, before I went back to the world of the working, working for the man, so to speak. I did actually start another small business in booking. I was a booking agency for artists, for independent artists across the country. And I did that for about a year. Mm-hmm. And again, found out that the idea was great. The money was not plentiful in that particular industry. So I had to, once again, it wasn't a huge business. It wasn't much just to shut down, but I actually ended up able to sell that business for a small amount of money. So I didn't just quit that time. I did sell it, but it wasn't, you know, it just wasn't profitable. And like you said, I had a lot of repair to do and I needed to get back to the working world. So I went back into media sales, fell back on my marketing experience and went into print sales, both for magazine and for the, I don't know if anybody remembers Yellow Pages.
Isn't that a website?
Yeah, something like
that. YP.com or something. Yeah.
Totally dating myself here. Negatives and Yellow Pages all in the same conversation. Go figure.
Oh, this is just the late 90s.
Okay. So, yeah, I went into media sales and, of course, was exposed to hundreds and hundreds of brick and mortar businesses that had the same questions every time I would sit down and talk with them about marketing and growing their business. And I decided, you know, when you're only selling one media and you have an obligation to your employer to stay focused on that, I decided that really I could do more for them. And I started Smart Marketing 360, which was my business outsourced marketing firm. Later combined forces with my business partner, and we went forward with FocusWorks Consulting and did high-end business consulting and business development. She was much more of a strategic arm. I was the tactical arm. So think outsourced marketing, and that's what we did for about 6 years.
Cool. Wow. Okay. So the partnerships like that do exist, where one is like, wouldn't it be great if this, and then the other one's like, execute. So
it did exist. Yes.
Cool. Because there's a lot of times where, you know, you have someone that's like, they want to do it all. And I think a lot of times, you know, you start running into that whole Superman syndrome thing that I think that's what Chris Ducker calls it. And, you know, it's just like, sometimes you just got to kind of pull back and figure out the strengths that you have and then so let someone else do the stuff that you're not so good at. You know?
I was just going to say that it is so horrible. If you haven't looked it up, I would recommend the hedgehog principle and really focusing in on what you do well and outsource the rest. And it's all about focusing on what your skills, talents, abilities, and passions allow you to do really, really well. Now, I can be just as strategic as my business partner, but not as naturally, not as easily. She can do tactics. She's actually now building websites, which is, you know, we learned a lot from each other, of course, in that 6 years. And we had like this constant little exchange of knowledge, but she could do those things too, but she wasn't as good at them naturally. And let's be honest, she liked strategy better. I liked the tactics better. Mm-hmm. Now, in this season, now in 2015, yes, we have yet one more failure coming up here, which at the end of this podcast, I hope everyone goes away with this one thing. Don't be afraid to reinvent. Don't quit until you have found that flow that you know is your gifting. And I am there now, but I've been down a couple different paths up that mountain. But in January of 2015, she and I decided that we really had different aspirations. I was growing in a different direction, somewhat because of the John Maxwell team. We talked a little, you mentioned that earlier, and really wanting a desire to get into teaching more than doing for. So getting away from the I'll do it for you marketing and getting into, I want to help you with your mindset around your business and around marketing, because no marketing plan will ever be successful if a business owner doesn't have the right mindset to how to go into it and know their vision, mission, goals, know their customer, and know how they want to build that business as a legacy. So leadership became my lane, along with coaching and teaching and training. So I wanted to go a different direction. She wanted to go a different direction. So we amicably split in January of 2015, which left Teresa starting from scratch again. Now, I had a little experience in this, right? So I've been down this road. I kind of knew what to expect. And literally on January 15th, I sat down at my desk with a piece of paper and I wrote out all the skills that I knew that I had. I then prioritized them by what I could monetize the fastest. And I suddenly became a graphic designer. And as a graphic designer, I had never been one in the world before. I was always a business consultant who could do graphic design. Of course, the graphic design comes from the photography. Mm-hmm. So all of these things have been leading up to the pinnacle of what I am today. And so I sat down and I said, I can be a graphic designer. I threw out a post on my own profile, not even my page, but just a profile, and said, if anybody's looking for graphic design, I can do it. And suddenly I have a windfall of business. And so here I am today working on phasing out of that into full-time speaking, coaching, and training. And it's going slowly. And you and I talked a little bit off the podcast about the interesting predicament you find yourself in when you're self-employed, but you're trying to move to a different self-employment job, right, or a self-employment endeavor. And for anyone who is working a full-time job for another company, I will tell you, switching from self-employed to self-employed in two different buckets goes no faster than it does when you're working for someone else. So don't be in a rush. You've got to make sure that your financial basis is stable and that you've provided for your family and that you're not wearing yourself out. I think sometimes we get very impatient. We think that if we own our own business, we'll have all the freedom and we won't have to work for this stupid job anymore. And at the end of the day, you will be no happier and no more fulfilled in a half-baked entrepreneurial endeavor than you are right now in a full-time job. So just take care of your basics, your financial needs. Make sure you're at least stable before you make the jump. I have a lot of businesses who come to me and ask, how do I get started? I'm going to quit tomorrow. And I tell them, don't you dare. Need to make an exit strategy. You need to, it might not be today and it might not be a year. Maybe you don't have to wait a whole year, but you need to have a plan to exit and move into the new endeavor. And that's exactly where I am. It's just interesting because it's from one self-employment into another.
Wow.
Are you laughing at me or
no? I'm just like, yeah, no. The thing is, I guess I'm laughing with you because I found myself kind of in the same situation this past 2015 as well. You know, I had been doing marketing for a startup, which I'm still actually on the board with, but because I living apart from your wife after being married for a year probably isn't the best thing to do. And I, as much as I loved doing what I did, her opportunity to have a job was a good couple of hours away from where I was living in the house that I inherited. And it's like, do I stay in comfort zone land and try to make it work up here? Which I, you know, in a way I kind of felt like I was a big fish in a smaller market. Or do I go down to Indianapolis, which is all brand new, and try to do my own thing down there? And that was kind of what the situation ended up being. It's like, okay, well, I guess I'm a big boy now, and let's try to do something with New Inception. So anyway, no, I understand exactly where you're coming from, and it's an interesting battle, but you know, I think it makes you all the better for it.
I think what it gives me is a very holistic view, mm-hmm, of the good, the bad, the ugly, the best, the worst. I mean, I've been through it all, and there's one thing to fail because something happened to you. It's another thing to admit you failed. And I use that word very lightly. I don't mean it in the shameful term analogy, like many associate failure to, but the failure is self-inflicted in my case. But the amazing journey that it took me on after that has made me that much more, I'll use the word wise, mm-hmm, to how I can help other businesses avoid some of those pitfalls. What can I use, and how can I leverage all of this experience into helping entrepreneurs really create a stable foundation on which to build a business? Mm-hmm. Which that really is what I love most of all talking about, is how can I help you as an entrepreneur make the right choices, and not the right choices according to me or anyone else, but help you determine what the right choices are for you and then create the plan to do so. And that is what a leader does. A leader says, this is what is important to me. This is the vision I have. I'm going to do these parts and I'm going to find other people to come alongside me and advocate for my vision to do it with me. And so I teach entrepreneurs how to be leaders, and not every entrepreneur is a leader. And that's where the leadership training comes into play, mm-hmm. in the fact that we need to understand we can't be tacticians in our businesses. We need to be entrepreneurs, and we need to have leadership qualities that raise up other leaders in our midst so we can pass on our legacy.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. And I think that, again, you run into that whole Superman syndrome, mm-hmm. situation where people, it's like, okay, well, maybe I don't want to do everything, but I don't know how to bring up anybody to take on the things that I'm doing.
Right.
So, yeah, I can see where you're coming from there.
And knowing when to hand it off.
Yeah.
We create, every entrepreneur at the moment they start a business should create an organizational chart. And the first time they make that chart, their name is going to be in every box. They're going to be the accountant, the janitor. They're going to be the salesperson, the customer service. But you need to have indicators and measurement points that you know when you reach this particular point, whether that be a financial revenue goal, or that be a workload goal, or that be hours per day that you're working. Some little tipping point needs to be indicated ahead of time to say, when I get to this point, it's time to start looking for this to be filled or that to be filled. And over time, you then start filling in other people's names in those boxes. And that's exactly actually where I am right now. I can build websites. I can do video. I can do it all. Mm-hmm. But I can't do it and write content and speak and travel. So I have actually just recently brought on a videographer and a web designer. And my name was in that box for a really long time. And so I've just recently been able to take my name out and put their name in. And I will tell you, it's one of the most liberating feelings you'll ever have. Being able to say, I'm now outsourcing this. I can tell you what to do. And I know it's just going to get done. And it's beautiful when you can wake up on a Saturday and your website has been changed the way you wanted it, and you didn't have to stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning to do it.
Mm. Nice.
Yeah. Cool. It's great. And, slowly but surely I'll start outsourcing other pieces as well. But for right now, those were the two that for where I'm going were the right people showed up to put on the bus in the right seats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you're saying. It's all about being able to predict your scalability and all that, yes. sort of stuff. So no one, having a roadmap, as you would.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So what are some of the current projects that you're doing? I mean, you said that right now you are doing speaking, and I think you said that you had to drive like four hours to get to your most recent engagement, yep. or something like that.
Four and a half hours from Minnesota to Appleton, Wisconsin. Mm. And thank goodness we had good weather. We had no problems, no snow, no ice. Right now, my projects are looking to fill my speaking schedule for 2016. I've got quite a few on the books now. I want to fill those up a little bit more. I'm also going to be starting my book. I'll have a book out in late fall. So I'm looking forward to getting that started and getting that cranked out. I've got quite a bit collected. I need to put it all in one place. So I'm working on my first book, and I will be an author by the end of the year, which will be exciting. And of course, I'm also working on putting together a couple of different things. Number one, it's called, Institute for Business, which will be an online curriculum. I'm hoping to have that up by the end of the year. So that will be an online, do it at your own pace curriculum for entrepreneurs through the topics of marketing, leadership, and of course, business development and sales. Mm-hmm. So that is one project that's on the books as well. And then Better Life University, it will be another, which will be specifically for mindset, motivational self-confidence, and more of the soft skills that go into being an entrepreneur. And those two hopefully will be up by the end of the year.
Cool. Nice. And as far as like over the next 5 years, do you have any ideas what you're looking to do there?
The next 5 years, I would be happy if I've kind of thought about this in a general sense. I would say if I'm traveling nationally to speak, mm-hmm. I would be happy of doing that once a quarter, mm-hmm. and speaking regionally within my 5-state area monthly. So speaking and training, and when I say speaking, I really am referring more to training. I love that one to many. Mm-hmm. And my greatest bit of fulfillment is when I see those light bulbs go on for people and I see them changing the things that they're currently doing in a better way to be more successful and feel more confident and move more confidently in the direction of their dreams. So I can see that in groups, and oftentimes, you know, keynoting is another way to speak, and that's fine. I love it, but it just doesn't fulfill me as much as working with a small group, 40 to 50 people in a room, and really getting into the projects and tactical
workshop,
hands-on. Yeah. Workshop environment.
Got it. Got it. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
So
yeah, that's cool. I can see where you're coming from with that, because you don't want to be that speaker that knows that you're kind of leaving people to go do it on their own, maybe.
Right.
You know, does that sound familiar? Because it's like, you know, one of the things that I've always had issues with whenever I go to conferences in the past is that I would go and it would be a keynote sort of a situation. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, man, this is an awesome speech and I'm getting so much stuff and I'm writing down all these notes, blah, 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 blah. And what happens when you leave?
Yep.
you know, and you know, the thing is that it sounds to me that, you know, you definitely understand that once people get back to their comfort zone, they're back in their comfort zone and they don't necessarily do much different.
Right. There. I think if you need to have the tactical practice in a safe environment, which can happen in a workshop environment, especially when you're talking about communication, which is another one of my favorite subjects. Practicing how to say certain things and how to reframe and be able to do it with a group that is a shared experience. Everyone is in the room feeling awkward. So it feels a little more safe to kind of press those limits, press those boundaries that you normally, with someone outside of the experience, not having the context of the teaching, mm-hmm. it's hard to practice there because you don't get the same reciprocation. You don't get the feedback. And when you're in that environment, to be able to really hone those skills while you're there makes you a little more confident to do it in the outside world, so to speak, you know, outside the workshop environment. So giving skills and giving tactics and giving real practical exercises that you can learn from, practice, and then execute in the world, there's nothing of greater value than that.
Right. Right. Well, and more, even if it's a difference between saying conceptually, oh yeah, go try this versus a handout, which is like, this is what you need to do first. This is right. what you need to do second, third, fourth, fifth, etc.
Exactly.
And it's just amazing how, you know, just a slight change of how you present your ideas and your information can be so much more impactful than just saying, oh yeah, this is what other people have done. Go do it.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and I've been to a ton of motivational speeches and motivational keynotes, and you go away feeling really well, but like you're saying, there's no tangibles to go, oh, this is what I need to do tomorrow. Mm-hmm. This is what I can do to change this yesterday. And, you know, I always reference my dad. He's got so many little metaphors, but he says anybody can teach anybody or motivate somebody to take a shower. You know, you can get, but what happens after that? So I All think right. it really comes down to giving life skills in a practical, easy to understand and applicable manner is what I try to create my training around.
Nice. I like that a lot, actually. That's cool. So kind of wrapping up at the end of the hour here, going to go into the rapid fire question segment. And for people that have been following along on past episodes, these are all the same. And the first question is, three things you'd want people to remember you by after hearing about you on the show today.
You know, I want them to remember that I care, that I've been through it. I've walked the path and I've done it wrong a lot. And I've done it right a lot. And so from that, I have perspective that maybe a lot of other business owners don't have. And I would say if there was anything besides remembering me, remember these three things. Number one, don't go too fast. Take your time. There's no race. There's no deadline. If you want to own your own business and you're not able to do it today, make a plan, sit down with your goal sheet and work the plan, but don't go too fast. Number two, don't be afraid to reinvent. If you get down a path and you need to quit, Understand what it means to strategically quit and redirect. That's different than failing. And number three, don't be afraid to quit. Don't be afraid of the shame that you think might come, and be confident in your direction and just know that you're going to redo it later in a new and better way.
You know, and what's funny is that even when you were talking about that previously in the show, I was thinking, you know, I just wrote two blog posts about quitting and failure.
It's like, awesome.
So, you know, if you guys want more pointers, go to that there. The first step was written February 9th, Quitting Without Regret. And then Failure was a week after that, and February 15th, Failure, a Great Way to Succeed. So, yeah, check those out if you want any more pointers on quitting and how to do that successfully.
Awesome.
Next question is three favorite teachers, experts, or just generally people that have made influences in your life.
Just three.
Sorry, got to keep it to a limit.
Well, yeah. I'm gonna break the rules and I'm gonna give you five because can't help it. So my father, number one, my father's at the top. Number two, Tony Robbins. Mm-hmm. I would say also Darren Hardy and Jim Rohn. Those are two. They're kind of synonymous. And then of course Brendan Burchard. So those are my go tos.
Well, hey, that was actually pretty quick. So hey, that's if you can cover five that quickly, that's fine. So yeah, I can't argue with that. Actually, that's good. I like that list. So, next question: what does success mean to you, and how do you personally achieve that?
Success to me is getting to do what you want to do without losing the joy in the process. So, I think going after it is creating a plan and executing that plan. And staying present in every moment of that working of the plan. Don't get too far ahead of yourself and don't stay stuck in the past. I, you know, for all of the reinvention that I have done, I think in the past I have thought way too far in the future. And there's a funny psychological thing about feeling success before you've actually achieved it. And I think for many years in my life, I've done that. I felt I was more successful than I was in the moment because my brain and my sights were so far in the future that I neglected to look at the present situation, which was caused, you know, it has caused me turmoil, as you've heard. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really, really important to stay present. Be grateful for where you are right this very second. There are blessings around us every moment of every day. And if we only focus on the negative, if we only look at what we don't have, that lack mentality, we will miss the blessings and the journey of getting to where we want to go. So
it's funny that she even bring that up. I was just listening to a podcast. I think it was the Solopreneur Hour, maybe. And they were talking about the difference between those that have the scarcity mindset.
Okay. Yep.
So those with a scarcity mindset actually are the ones that have, they're the ones that tend to have, that don't pay, for one, they don't pay attention to the good things in their life. And that's actually how you move to an abundance mindset, is that you actually start paying attention to the stuff that's in your life and appreciating that stuff. And it can be small stuff is what they were talking about. You know, just that your knees are working, that you can get up, that you can wake up, that, you know, mm-hmm. you know, all these simple things like that. And then once you start seeing that for what it is, it starts moving you from that negative mindset, and then starts helping you think about what is and what could be, and, you know, go in that direction. So yeah, I would definitely agree with your definition there. I like that. So next question is, you know, we were talking about reinvention earlier. Mm-hmm. If someone was having issues figuring out what their next path in life is, you know, is it to move on to a new job, or even to start their own business, or start another kind of business, or scale, or whatever? What do you think four steps that they can take to figure out what the next step is?
I think number one is to reflect on your experience, both your strengths, your talents, your skills, your experience in work, whatever that is. Reflect on that and figure out what you have, what's in your coffers, what's in your toolbox that you can bring forward, and then determine what are you passionate about. If those things that you can do, what is your biggest passion and what do you get the most fulfillment from? Mm-hmm. And then lastly, like, you know, like I did back when I started in 2015, what can you monetize and what seems to be the most marketable of those passions? So I think reflect is step number one, reset the dashboard and start from scratch. You know, take what you know and create something brand new. Maybe it's a version of something else you've seen before, but just reset it and start again. Reinvent it. Like, you know, you're basically with the resetting, you're reinventing, and then rev it up. Put some power behind it. Put some steps behind it. Even if it's part-time or a couple of hours a week, do something proactive to get that message out there. Mm-hmm. And start, it's almost like putting on, you know, when we dress up, we feel better and we go out in public and we just are more confident. So look the part, feel the part, be the part for as many hours as you have available to do it. Mm-hmm. But don't be dissatisfied because you can't do it full time. Go slow, take your time, do a little bit at a time, and momentum will build and you can ride the momentum.
Mm, nice. Like that. Cool. So Teresa, where can people find you if they want to connect with you a little bit more?
And everywhere. First of all, I would love anyone who is interested to join my newsletter. You can go to my website, which is Focus Works Training. That's Focus as in See Better, F-O-C-U-S, workstraining.com. There's a little drop down. You can join the newsletter there. You can also find me on almost all social platforms, Twitter. My handle is FW Train. And of course, Instagram is FocusWorksTrain. And I might also add on every Tuesday, about 2 o'clock Central Standard Time, I do a Periscope broadcast. I call it Teresa's 2-Minute Tidbits. And we talk about practical tips for improving business and life on that journey to success. So it's pretty random. I just kind of speak from the heart. It's very impromptu and casual. But I share my best advice for small businesses to get to the next level.
Awesome. Cool. Well, definitely pleasure having you on today, and
pleasure being here.
Yeah, it was definitely good and very insightful and how one can reinvent themselves. So, yeah, I hope people go check you out and take your advice to heart.
Awesome. Appreciate the opportunity, and it's been great being here.
Thank you. So there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please feel free to tag us on Twitter at New Inceptions and Instagram at new.inceptions and let us know what you thought. Also subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. And don't forget that when Google finally gets their act together and releases podcasts on Google Play, we'll be there as well. As mentioned before the chat, show notes are available by going to newinceptions.com/session27. Show note extras for this session include a very powerful short video that might be a new staple video of mine. Also, I'm including some TEDx footage as well. I really think they will help you transition to what you're wanting to do in the not-too-distant future. The first video is a TEDx talk from founder of Reinvention International. His name is Wesley Gu. In his presentation, he discusses some of the ways to successful transition to a new beginning. The second video is from author Robert Greene. In this passionate talk, he shares the key to transforming ourselves and also talks about his own personal transformation and his path to becoming a best-selling author. The last TEDx talk I have for you is from Dr. Mario Alonso Puig. I picked this particular chat for my analytical friends and myself, who tend to be the most stubborn about who they are and who we can be. And as a bonus piece, I got something from Steve Harvey from his book, Act Like a Success, Think Like a Success. Specifically in chapter 13 of his book, he talks about not being afraid to reinvent yourself. He also talks about how you should diversify your talent once you find it, and also a little bit about how to not get stuck in your past self. And that's pretty much it for the extras. In next week's show, Layla and I talk with someone that was recently on Pat Flynn's SPI podcast, Stefan Moses Blacksburg. In that talk, we learned about his path into entrepreneurship and what kind of motivation Pat was able to give him to become a better version of himself. But we're not going to cover any of that because it's already been covered. Instead, we're going to go into a more personal level with Stefan. We got to know a little bit more about who he is, what it felt like to be on one of the top podcasts, and his different experiences in being a freelance videographer, recognized author, and a popular podcaster in his own right. So check us out next Thursday for that particular show. Until then, head on over to the show notes found at newinceptions.com/session27. Again, there is where you'll find the show notes for everything we did cover today. And as always, thank you guys again for sharing the show. We've seen a huge, a little bit of Donald Trump there, uplift in our numbers recently, and that's coming from you guys. So thank you all for that. Really appreciate it. You know, it just means that we're impacting more and more people, helping them reinvent themselves, which is totally awesome. We want to help as many people find their gift and do what they're supposed to do, so we're really glad that you guys are helping us make that impact. If you haven't already, please subscribe and leave us a review on whichever platform you're using. Beyond making us look good, it also helps new people find the show in the future. So I think that's pretty much it. Go check out the show notes at newinceptions.com/session27 if you want to connect with Teresa and see what she's up to, or find out more about reinventing yourself if you feel like you're stuck. So until next time, keep doing the work that you're meant to do. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web @newinceptions.com.